How many of you here know Ben Peltz? So quite a few of you do. For about 10 years, I've been connecting with a group of churches from Burma. They are scattered all across Canada, about 10 congregations. They have a lot of young people in those churches. They all have come from a place of violent persecution. That's why they're here in Canada. They have about 150 years of Christianity, this particular group, in Burma. So they have this long history. They have now landed in our country, are working and putting together life here. But their young people have been struggling. I've been at their conferences. I've been at their events. They love to sing. They love to play soccer. But they are struggling in terms of their spiritual life. Quite a few of them. And in the last year, two of them have committed suicide. One was in Kitchener, just so hurtful and painful. So the leaders of these churches have been wanting to put together a camp. So this winter, I was looking with Indy, who is the national coordinator for them. He and I went looking for a camp. I called camps. Finally found a place not too far from here, the Wesleyan Silver Lake camp, which some of you might be familiar with. And so we have arranged to go there. About 150 young people will be there today and for this coming week. And Indy and I had arranged for the place. He traveled back to Burma. I traveled to Africa. We came back to Canada, and I said to him, "So do you have a speaker for this event?" "No, I thought you were going to get the speaker." So I sent out an SOS, and the person who responded almost immediately was Ben Peltz. So Ben is going to be speaking this week to about 150 young people who really have never had this kind of camping experience before. It's the first time ever for them. And so this is a very special week, and I would urge you to pray for him and for all of those young people who are at camp this week. They're not quite chin enough for their parents, and they're not Canadian enough for the Canadians, and they're kind of stuck in between. So I would really appreciate your prayer for them. Would you do that? How many of you would agree to pray for them this week? Thank you so much. I love telling you good news stories of things that are happening in our country because it just seems like cheating not to tell. I've been telling you about this Persian church in Toronto that I've been connecting with for quite some time. I remember meeting with them when they were very tiny. And the first time I went, it was about Christmas time, so they had quite a group. Because on special occasions, lots of people will come. They're not Christians at all, but they'll come anyway. And so at the end of the service, there was an invitation for prayer. And the aisle was just full of people who wanted prayer. And one young woman wanted prayer. And so I said to her, through her interpreter, "What would you like prayer for?" And the interpreter asked the girl, and the interpreter said to me, "She wants prayer for good luck." It's not really what I was used to praying for people. But that little church has been growing. And next month, on the 14th, they are planning to have a baptism of 70 people in one day. I have never, ever participated in a baptism for 70 people in one day. But I just would like you to be glad that God is working among Iranian people, Persian people, in an exceptional way, that his mercy is great, and it's showered these days, especially on Persian or Iranian people. Here they call themselves often Persians, but they're from Iran, where it's against the law to convert, you know. They said, "We'll kill you if you do this." But they are not afraid. They are coming to faith, and I am very much looking forward to this. I just would like you to be glad together with them. They have all kinds of craziness among them, too. There's all kinds of brokenness and, and struggles. And so I talk to the pastor every Friday morning, every Wednesday morning, just because I know that this is such a challenging and difficult work. They have about 140 people showing up for their Bible study on Tuesday nights. And people will stay and have questions and questions. And he says, they don't let us go home. You know, it's 11 o'clock. It's midnight. They say, you know what? We have to go home. And he told me a couple of weeks ago that one of them said, you know, we don't really want to go home. When we're here, there is such peace. And as soon as we go home, all of that other darkness comes back. And so I just would love you to know and share in this reality that God is working among us and around us, and it's a great thing. This morning, I want to speak with you about your jobs. Now, some of you might say, well, I don't have a job. Oh, I've got something for you also. And so we're not going to lose anybody here this morning. And if you think that it's too late for me, it's not too late. We've got something for you. Oh, that's not really what I had in mind. okay, what am I going to do here? Let me see if we can. Everything was working perfectly until you were looking. Here we are. So, when you think about all of those people, you see them all? You see yourself there? I don't know that you're there, but does God really care about all those people's jobs? We say he cares for the people. Does he only care for us on Sunday morning? Or is Monday important to him also? You think it is? Does he, if supposing you are cleaning an office building, do you think he cares about your job? Are you sure? One person is sure. I'm going to hitchhike a little bit on Joseph's life here. You know, he was the favorite son. Recently, I met a couple. And she said this to me. She said, I was never the favorite. And I thought, wow, what a sentence. I was never the favorite. This was the favorite. The favorite son sold as a slave at about 17 years of age. It's a pretty delicate age to be sold. Mind it's hard to be sold at any age, but at 17, he was slave and a prisoner for about 13 years. He was a steward in Potiphar's house for maybe 4 years, we don't know exactly. He was in an Egyptian prison or dungeon for about 9 years, and he had no good reason to believe that he was ever going to get out of there. It was a dark time in his life. But he became the prime minister of Egypt at about 30 years of age. So that's just a little sketch of his life. And then there's a huge reunion, a family reunion of pain and joy at the end of Genesis. That's a great, great story. We're not going to look at that part this morning. But I want us to read this. Pharaoh said to Joseph, this was after the dreams, and he interpreted Pharaoh's dreams, and Pharaoh says, well, we've got nobody who can interpret dreams like this. Now, I don't know whether you've ever thought of putting on your resume that you can interpret dreams. Anybody here put that on their resume? But here's a man who saved the whole country because he knew how to interpret dreams. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby, because you have been able to interpret the dreams, I hereby put you in charge of the entire land of Egypt. And wherever Joseph went, the command was shouted, kneel down. Then Pharaoh gave Joseph, well, he couldn't have a single man in charge of the whole country. He needed to have a wife. And so he gave Joseph a new Egyptian name. He said, we're not going to call you Joseph anymore. We're going to call you Zephaneth-Paneah. And he also gave him a wife whose name was Asenath. She was the daughter of Potiphar, the priest of On. He was 30 years old when he began serving in the court of Pharaoh, and he inspected the entire land of Egypt. As predicted, for 7 years the land produced bumper crops, During those years, Joseph gathered all the crops grown in Egypt and stored the grain from the surrounding fields in the cities. He piled up huge amounts of grain like sand on the seashore. You couldn't keep track of the amount of it. So, he's essentially in business administration. Do we have anybody here that's in business administration? Yes? So we know that God cares about your job. He's in charge of all Egypt. He's collecting food during 7 years of plenty. There's so much more than they can eat that they're just storing it and storing it and storing it because he knows there are 7 years of famine coming. They're making these huge piles of grain or wheat or whatever they were storing there, and then he's selling back to them during the 7 years of famine, and he's selling it to them for money, and then they run out of money. And they said, you know what? We're ashamed to come back, but our money is gone. Well, he said, give me your livestock. So they give him livestock for food. And then they come back a year later and they said, you know what? We don't know what to say, but our livestock is gone and our food is gone. And they said, all we have is ourselves and our land. Well, we'll take the land. And he takes their land. And then the money from the land is all gone. And they said, you know what? We do not know what to say. But here we are. The money from the livestock, the land, all the money we had in our savings account is all gone. And so he took them as slaves. The people, the whole land, everything in it came to belong to Pharaoh. Now, I'm not sure there are any economic students here this morning, whether you think this is a really good idea or not. But this is what happened. All of these, the whole land of Egypt came to be in Pharaoh's pocket. Famine brings Joseph's family, and we're not going to talk about that part of the story this morning. But it's a great, great story. And then all Egypt and the Egyptians belonged to Pharaoh. And when it was all gone, they said, now what are we going to do now? The rains have come back, but we have no seed to plant. And he says, he gives them seed to plant. But he says, you're going to pay 20% on everything you gain in the future into Pharaoh's coffers. A flat rate for everybody. That's what he did. And the people were thankful. They said, you have saved our lives. That was their story. Was God interested in Joseph's job? If so, why? Why was God interested in this man's job? Was it because it preserved the nation of Israel? Well, I'm sure that he was interested in that. It's true that it did preserve the life of the nation of Israel. He was very interested in that. Or did he actually care about business administration? What do you think about that? Does he care about how they communicate, how accounting is done, how management is done? Is God concerned about those things? You don't think so? Doesn't care. Okay. What about accounting software packages? Does he care about them? Is God interested in your paying job? Or your non-paying responsibilities? I think that on Sundays, we quite often behave as if what people were doing the week didn't matter. So we come together here on Sundays. This is a very important thing that we're doing. We're remembering the Lord. We're hearing the Word of God. We're worshiping. But what about 10 o'clock tomorrow? Does that matter? That's what I'd like to talk with you about this morning. Here's a song of a passionate heart. Unknown to us, God's compelling hand is behind every decision we make and everything we do. Our path is His business, not ours. He's very interested in our path. The Bible has a lot to say about God looking for people who will walk in His ways, who will walk on His kind of path. Our path is His business, not ours. Our business is to trust Him with all our heart, and refuse to rely exclusively on our own understanding. Certainly, we must plan and prepare. But we must hold our schemes and dreams loosely, giving God the right to revise them or replace them without our approval or knowledge, permitting him to advise us, correct us, inspire us, prompt us, knowing that God's compelling hand is directing everything we do. You like that? That God's hand is behind. There are so many decisions I have made that I look back and I think God was in this. There are lots of times when we don't recognize it in the present tense. But looking back, we say, oh my, it's as if God was causing things to fit together in ways we had no idea. And we're saying, just coming back to this, let's just read it again. Our path is his business, not ours. He's the one who shines the light on the path for us to walk. Our business is to trust him with all our heart and refuse to rely exclusively. It's not like we don't have any understanding. I mean, he's the one who gave it to us. But we're not relying on that exclusively. Certainly, we plan and prepare, but we must hold our schemes and dreams loosely. So I had schemes and dreams about what was going to happen here in Ottawa this weekend. So I made plans, and when they work out, I say, yes. When they don't work out so well, I think, okay, we still have some things to learn here. But so far, this weekend has been going very well, and I've been saying, yes. So yesterday, we met upstairs with two men that I'd never met before. They are Ethiopians. They are just in the process of starting a church, but they don't know really what they're doing. Could you help us? And so I met with them just upstairs in the Sunday school room yesterday. And it's very likely that we will continue to work to help them and coach them and support them. So that just happened here yesterday. Well, that's a part of a dream come true for somebody like me. And so we have our schemes and dreams, but don't hold them too tightly as if they actually belong to you. Giving God the right to revise them because he might have something better in mind, something different in mind than what I had planned. He has the right to revise them, replace them. After all, Joseph in jail. What's this? What is God doing letting this guy rot for 9 years? Would you have the gall to plan somebody's life like that? The plans of God are a lot bigger than anything I can imagine. It's too big for me to get it. So when I read stories like this, I say, wow, God has an enormous plan that includes letting Joseph sit, apparently, for 9 years. Now, of course, Joseph, God was grooming him and preparing him, and there were things going on in him. It was not for nothing. But from our vantage point, would you write it in as a part of Joseph's resume? He should have 9 years in jail, forgotten, in a foreign country, where he doesn't know the language. Wow. So when I look at this, God reserves the right to revise them or replace them. There are stages in my life that I wouldn't have advised God to give those to me. But he did. They were difficult. They were transforming to me, even against my will. To correct us, inspire us, and prompt us, knowing that God's compelling hand is directing everything we do. It's somehow behind us. How does that work together? My planning and scheming and dreaming and his control, I don't know exactly how that works. It's one of those mysterious things that we can tell. Sometimes we are prompted in the present tense, but quite often we only get it in retrospect. We just were obeying by faith, and then we discovered afterwards, oh, this is what was going on. Our jobs or our responsibilities, we are created to be co-creators and stewards. If you don't give people something to steward, they're missing out on why they were created. And this is from an urban farmer. This is a story about people in Detroit, where whole sections of the city have been destroyed, and people have started to farm those sections in the middle of Detroit. People have been stewards. A steward is somebody that is given a responsibility. So if we give Dan a responsibility to not let go, not tell anybody about the surprise of the freezies. So he did everything really great this morning, but that little piece didn't work so well. But he is a steward of a certain responsibility, and he's just like all of us. Some pieces of what we're doing will work perfectly, and others not quite so much. But all of us, whether we are young or old, being paid to do our job, not being paid to do our job, we all need something to steward, something to feel responsible for. You can be retired, you can be unemployed, you can be your whole time to raising your children, but God is giving you responsibility, and each one of us thrive when we have a sense that we know what God has called us to do right now. Whatever that is, he has given us a responsibility and he cares about that. It doesn't matter what stage or age. Work became labor in Genesis 3. There was work before sin and the fall. But after sin came in, work became labor. There became sweat and thorns and thistles and trouble. Work has a God-infused purpose. It's to create so that when we have the opportunity to create something, to make something, whether it's a cake or a building or whatever it is, we stand back and say, that was good. Yesterday, my wife and I went over to somebody else's house, and she had helped make a cake. Some satisfaction in the fact that the cake went over well. So she has a certain stewardship, a certain responsibility, and there is kind of some enjoyment to us when that stewardship works out well. It brings satisfaction to us, and it's God who has put that to have dominion and responsibility. People who begin to get jobs, they say, well, I wonder if I could have a better job. Could I have a job with more responsibility? Could I have a job with, you know, that has more meaning and purpose to it? Why are we like that? It's because God has made us that way. He's made us to have things that we are responsible for, to have a sense of worthwhileness related to that. He's given us this capacity to want to have this dominion and responsibility. He told them they were to care for the garden. Day by day to care for it, to provide for, to be in relationship with. All of those things are infused in the purpose of God. So whoever we are, all of these things are things that God has designed to be a part of your life. And this morning I want you to be thinking, well, what does this mean to me? I'm not interested in here and just doing a talk this morning. I would love for you to be thinking, right while I'm talking and towards the end of the service this morning, we're going to invite you for prayer. If you're saying, you know what, I'm a little bit lost about this right now, I would appreciate prayer. We want to give you an opportunity to be prayed for and with later this morning. There is something creator-like in honorable work, something good about finding my work role or calling within society. Where do I belong? Where do I fit? And some of us right now say, oh, I know exactly where I fit. Others of us are saying, I don't know. I don't really know where I fit or where I belong. And I would love for this morning to be the beginning of a search for you where you will begin to say, I want to know that. I want to know where I fit, where I belong. What is God's purpose for me at this stage of my life? There is something noble in work when it is done not only for personal reward, but for the benefit of others and ultimately for the glory of God, that we're not just slugging it out. The first job I ever had after high school, it didn't take long until I didn't really like it. And I was getting up to go to work at 7 o'clock in the winter. It's dark and cold and this job that I don't like. I was beginning to have what they call experience. And this didn't feel like a good thing to me. But it began a quest for me to look for something more meaningful, something. So when there is an opportunity for something different or better, we naturally want to go for that. There's something noble about this, because we're not just doing it for a paycheck at the end of the week. We would like for this job to be something more than that. And how can that be? There is something healthy about being suitably busy and productive. I'm not talking about being excessively busy or crazy busy. I'm just saying there's something healthy about being suitably busy and productive. And I want to bug you this morning. I want to provoke you to think that this could be true for you at this stage in your life. I'd like you to be thinking this morning, what does God actually have for me at this point in my life? I may have told you this before. When my mom was 92, she could no longer walk, feed herself. Her mind was totally alert. And there was a day when I went there and she said, I still pray that the beauty of Jesus might be seen in me. She knew that she still had a capacity to have a meaningful life, even though she couldn't physically do anything. Five M's that matter. You don't just have one boss, you have two. You maybe have a boss who's responsible for your work where you get paid, but you have a bigger boss who matters. And if you're not employed, you're not getting paid, then you have the same big boss, the same Lord, as anybody else. You have a mission to bless the people around you. You know, Jesus said, bless and curse not. We hear quite a bit of cursing around us. But is it possible for you to bless people? My wife happens to be exceptionally good at this. And a couple of years ago, just before Easter, she was a part of a group, and they were going to do something for Lent. And you know, often at Lent, people give something up. And she decided she was going to add something rather than giving it up. So she decided that every day she would bless somebody in our neighborhood. And she found a way to do it. She would call somebody up and she'd say, oh, you know what? This man is so good with his grandchildren. So she wrote a note, said, I just couldn't help but notice how patient and committed you are to your grandchildren. And I just want to bless you for that. Whew, how many people get a note like that? No, not many. So every single day, she blessed somebody in our neighborhood and used the word bless, because you know the word bless is not that common. You don't hear people say, oh, I got a great blessing today, or I was watching television last week, it was such a good blessing. Usually not. So to bless the people around me, it's not just the job you're doing. Can you be a blessing to the people? You have to do it on purpose. You know, this doesn't just happen. You understand what I'm saying? It doesn't just happen. You have to make up your mind that I'm going to deliberately now be a blessing. Now, some of you might think, well, I'm not that good at blessing people. I'd rather tell them off. So I want to prod you a little further this morning about this and say to bless people is a part of what Jesus talked about. Bless and curse not. Bless is like do it. And so if you can say, I would like to bless people, you don't have to say much. Just, I noticed how you have been with your grandchildren, and I want to bless you for that. So she's doing it all the time now. She's blessing people regularly. And I'm thinking, really, you said that? And but it's a powerful thing that we can do. Method, use your God-given gifts and talents. Whatever gifts or talents you have, well, that's a good starting place. You don't need to be start off by doing something you've never done before and you're no good at. Just start with the things that you are somewhat good at. Maintain growth in your capacity. Keep looking for some way to keep learning. Mate, go through the job doors that you have harmony about with your spouse. This is a pretty important thing. For those of you who are married, don't take a job that your spouse is repulsed by for whatever reason. Take your time. Pray it through. Find a way to make a decision that you can make together and you can be confident about together. I want to ask you. We're going to sing together. But I want to ask you this. Is there something happening in relationship to your job just now? Something you are quite concerned about? Something we could pray for? Or maybe it's your non-job that you're concerned about. You know what? I feel like I really know what my place is. So a little later, we're going to invite you to the front to pray with us about that. So just be thinking about that. Say to yourself, do I need prayer to find my current role, my current place? Is this something that I should be praying about? And could we start that here this morning? Okay? So, don't forget, we're going to come back to this in a few minutes. Job, or maybe I don't have a job and I'm concerned about my sense of purpose, would you just come up and we will pray with you. So feel free to come wherever you are and join us here. And we would like to pray with you so that this could be a time when you're going to be taking seriously with God his purpose and his for you. So if you want to go, feel free to go. But if you'd like to come for prayer, please do.